WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A PBS special this month pays tribute to the lyrics of Oscar Hammerstein. His son Jamie provides a tour of the family farm where Hammerstein wrote many of his songs. We invited Jamie to talk with us about his father. Oscar Hammerstein's musicals appear to be as popular as ever. Carousel was recently revived in New York, and now a Howell Prince production of Showboat is a Broadway hit. Jamie Hammerstein has directed many revivals of his father's musicals, including The Sound of Music, Oklahoma, South Pacific, and The King and I. Jamie also handles the Hammerstein estate. I asked him a very hypothetical question. Say I was mounting a revival of Oklahoma. What would I need to get from Jamie Hammerstein and the estate before starting my production?
Total permission, and we would put artistic strings on things so that we would have a final decision as to who your director would be, who the major stars would be, if there are any, and hopefully there wouldn't for Oklahoma, because they're about young people there. If you get stars, it's usually wrong. And we would have a casting approval, director approval, lighting designer approval, and we would use them.
Now, would I resent you for exercising this control over my production?
Well, it would tend, yeah, that could be. A lot of people resent and they say we didn't allow the show to come in. And really, the truth was we never gave their permission. They just hoped we would give it to them later. And very often we don't sit over somebody's shoulder. It depends on who it is. Mm-hmm. Nick Heitner is a director that I've admired for a long time.
And he did Carousel last
year. Yes, and when he came with Carousel, I said, whoop, we don't have to watch over this guy. This guy is going to do what he wants, and we're going to let him do it, and we're going to back him to the hilt. Because that's the best way to protect ourselves, is to back him to the hilt. It varies. We're in the theater. Mary Rogers and myself have been in the theater since we were children. It isn't as if we're not aware of what artistic freedom means and how necessary that is for the people doing it.
Mary Rogers is Richard Rogers' daughter?
Yes.
A few years ago, the conductor John McGlynn put together a restored version of Showboat on CD. And he took songs that had been taken out of the original production and put them in, and restored some of the original language which had been taken out of subsequent productions, most notably in the song Old Man River, which had over the years been sung as Color Folks Work on the Mississippi and Here We All Work on the Mississippi. He restored the original words, which were Niggers All Work on the Mississippi.
Right.
There was a big controversy over whether that was racist or whether the use of the word nigger was an indictment of the racism of the time. Did you have to give your permission for that? And where did you stand on that controversy?
Actually, I stand on the latter. I was doing a show. I was doing
The latter is that it's an indictment of the racism of the time.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I know
so that it's okay to use it.
I'm a white person. I cannot say it's okay if it offends 45 million black people. It's not okay. But at the same time, it was meant as an indictment of white people. There's no doubt about that. And if you study black history at all, you will find that the word nigger probably was the nicest word somebody could use about a black person in 1888. And we don't want to go in what the other words were. But times have changed, so it's a little bit like turning your back on history and inventing other words like colored folk, which at the time of that the play takes place hadn't been invented. So what are you going to do? But I mean, I will bend on something like that. I'm not in this business to make people unhappy.
Do you remember what it was like for your father when he kept trying to update the language of that song and change it as the decades changed?
I don't know. He was, I think what I've said he would say better. But I would think that he would recognize that he was unwittingly insulting people and therefore he would change it.
Mm-hmm.
Because his intention was not to insult them at all. His intention was his intention was to write a protest song for black people, I think. And if the words don't fit the protest song because times have changed, then he's got to change the words. But I don't think that I think for a lyricist to purposely use the wrong word, it's a little tough, but it's worth it.
My guest is theater director Jamie Hammerstein. He's the son of lyricist Oscar Hammerstein. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Jamie Hammerstein is my guest, and he's a theater director, past president of the Society of Stage Directors and Choreographers, and son of the great lyricist Oscar Hammerstein. Your family really has quite a theater legacy. I mean, your father, of course, was Oscar Hammerstein, the lyricist. Your grandfather was in vaudeville?
Yeah, he was a vaudeville producer. My great-uncle was an operetta producer, and my great-grandfather was Oscar I, who was an opera impresario, among other things, a real estate developer and vaudeville himself and an inventor.
So theater was the family business when you were growing up.
Yes, but you'd never know it. It was not what people imagine with Judy Garland running in with a tennis racket. I mean, it just wasn't. It seemed like, well, you know, it's the only life I had as a kid, so it seemed perfectly normal to me. And my father wrote in his study and for many hours every day, and he'd come out having, I'm sure, sweated bullets all day. And he would come out and go, who's winning the baseball game? Or do you want a game of tennis? Or, you know, and you'd never guess he'd been working for 8 hours trying to find a rhyme for Surrey, you know?
Well, did he walk around the house going, Surrey, scurry, Surrey, scurry?
No, he locked himself in, or he walked in down the we had a long yard where he would also pace. And we also, for one of his mother, built him a walk-around porch from his study so that nice weather, or even reasonable weather, he could take a walk by opening his study door. He always worked walking, and he was inaudible. I know he worked terribly hard, and I know he was a perfectionist. There's no doubt in my mind about those things, but he also could turn it off like a light and come out as one of the more normal people you've ever met.
I guess that's unusual in theater.
It's unusual with a writer,
being
I think.
Normal.
It's unreasonable. I mean, I think it's unreasonable. Yeah, I think it's almost supernatural myself.
Your father was Stephen Sondheim's mentor. I think it was when Sondheim's parents divorced when he was, I don't know, 10 or 11 or something, that he and his mother moved to rural Pennsylvania, or suburban Pennsylvania, where your family was living.
You got the facts right, but the order wrong. His parents had been divorced. He was living with his mother, and he came out to play with me one weekend, because he's a year and a day older than me. I know that because we shared birthdays for year in and year out. And he came out because we had just met and liked one another, and we had a good time, and instead of going off to camp, he decided to stay. He was the boy who came to dinner. He never left. Then his mother moved out to be close to us and see her son once in a while, because he literally moved in. And I think, you know, it's odd. I was thinking last night about that. And how much Steve owes my father, though I think he would be pretty much of a great writer if my father had not taken him in. But also my mother. I think both my parents were kind of adopted by Steve and vice versa. And he was like another brother, I suppose.
How did you feel about him moving in?
I don't know. He didn't bother me that much. We had a good time. You know, we fought like brothers fight, but we didn't... I don't think I felt any great jealousy. My father had a strangely objective form of love, which sounds like an impossibility. But he wrote about it a lot, and he thought about it a lot because he was writing about it. He had kind of an objectivity about it. And so it never became like a favoritism or... No, it just didn't happen. As far as I know, maybe I should go to a psychiatrist and find out what really happened.
How old were you when your father became partners with Richard Rodgers?
I was about 11.
So what do you know about the story of how he started to work with Richard Rodgers?
Well, Dick was approached by the Theater Guild to make a musical out of Green Grow the Lilacs. And he went to Larry Hart. And Larry Hart said, I'm not interested. And Dick still thought he could persuade Larry and went to Dad just in case and said, if Larry quits on me in the middle of this, will you save me? And my father said, if Larry doesn't want to do it or quits, I will not only do it, but I'll let Larry's name stay on it if you like. I'll just sit in the back and do the work. And then Larry actually insisted that he didn't want to do it. And so Dick went back to Dad and said, no, this is yours. And that's how it happened.
It's always been so interesting to me and probably everybody else who listens to musicals, how different your father's lyrics were than Larry Hart's lyrics.
Yeah, but I think the really interesting part about it is how different Dick's music was.
Yeah, right. What do you perceive of how his music changed when your father became a lyricist?
They're totally different people. I mean, my goodness. I mean, Larry Hart and my father were night and day in the way they looked at life. My father was an optimist. My father believed optimism was the only useful thing to be. The pessimism was just a waste of time, basically. And my father was very not into writing songs. My father was into developing, was a dramatist who was also a lyricist. And Dick is a dramatist who's also a composer. And I think Dad gave Dick the chance to be a musical dramatist. I think Larry wrote songs. And my father wrote characters and plot and everything else in his songs. And I think that changed Dick. Dick's pretty smart cookie. You know, I don't think it was surprised him. I think he knew what he was in for right off the bat.
What did your father think of Larry Hart's lyrics?
Oh, he loved most of them. I mean, I think Larry Hart... See, my father never had a great facility for strange and wonderful rhymes. Larry Hart did. So it's like there's no competition involved. My father could never write like Larry Hart. I don't think Larry Hart could ever write like my father, no matter how hard either one of them tried. They couldn't do it. And my father, not being a fancy rhymer, just wrote very honestly and very easy to sing lyrics. But they were, I think he spent his time saying exactly what he wanted to say dramatically in what I think is the most difficult dramatic form you can write in, which is lyrics. You have to make things come out metrically. You've got to have rhymes, the right kind of rhymes, not too many of them if it's a serious song. If it's a light song, maybe triple rhymes, inside rhymes. It is something which takes years to master, and I think my father mastered it, and he... Just trying to say what you want to say in that form is deadly difficult. You can get so seduced by a very clever rhyme. You can get so seduced by an easy rhyme. And it just takes a little bit of the edge of what you're really trying to say, and it goes on some tangent, which isn't too far off. So let's take that tangent and get it over with and go have a drink. And my father would never do it. He'd keep on, he'd just throw out more and more lyrics till he was saying what he wanted to say, and somehow it rhymed and was singable.
The songs that your father wrote are still sung on and off stage, and the musicals that he wrote are being revived now on Broadway. I mean, just in the past, year and a half or so, Carousel, Showboat. And revivals are becoming more and more important, I think, on Broadway. Do you have a sense that he ever suspected the songs would endure and that the musicals would endure in the way that they have?
No, I have a sense that he wouldn't have expected it to go that long. He had a pretty good-sized ego in a gentle sort of way. I mean, he's a very nice ego. I mean, you have to have an ego to have 11 years of flops and keep on writing. That's a useful kind of ego. But I don't think he would have dreamt of it. But I think there is an explanation. I do not think it's, like, so surprising. Why is it that we don't say, my God, they're reviving La Boheme at the Met? What's the big deal? What's the difference? The fact is that what happened during those years with, and, you know, when I grew up, I thought this is normal, you know, Frank Lesser, Cole Porter, my father. I thought there would always be people like that. And that was the golden age, and they created an art form. They didn't mean to. They wanted to make people happy and make some money. Probably that's what Puccini wanted to do. But they created an art form, and it's going to be revived until people get sick of it.
Well, Jamie Hammerstein, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much. It was very pleasant. Thank you.
Jamie Hammerstein is co-directing a revival of his father's musical State Fair, which will open in August in Des Moines. You can see Jamie Hammerstein in the PBS special that pays tribute to Oscar Hammerstein.
But don't say nothing, he just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant cotton.
This is Fresh Air.